I hereby introduce to you, Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Starting a business on your own can be lonely and worrying. Selling online multiplies this issue tenfold. Getting expert help is a great way to reduce anxiety, wasted time, and confusion. The Amazing FBA Mentoring Program is in its fourth year of helping sellers to get started on Amazon. By now, we have former clients who have, starting from scratch, done six figures and even in one case, seven figures a year. Obviously, these are not typical results. These are exceptional people. Nevertheless, we can help you get launched faster, safer, and with a much higher chance overall of success. With clients from Melbourne, Australia to Manchester, England, we bring a genuinely international perspective. To find out more, go to amazingfba.com/mentoring. Thanks for listening. Ladles and jelly spoons, boys and girls, this is Michael Veazey of Amazing FBA. Very warm welcome to the show today. I'm welcoming back a guest, Dan Medders of The Wholesale Formula. And the more I explore the wholesale business model, I've got a couple of little anecdotes about how that keeps popping up in my life. The more I realize it's very important alternative or addition to private label. Dan is the great person to talk about this. They've done over $25 million in sales on Amazon over multiple years. They, via the model they call reverse sourcing wholesale, which we're going to dig into a bit today. They taught thousands of people the same thing and hundreds of success stories. So completely the man for this model. So Dan, warm welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on again, Michael.
My pleasure. So last time I had you on, I grilled you about the differences between this business model and other business models, but I'm going to leave that to one side today. Let's cut to the chase. What is this reverse sourcing wholesale in a nutshell?
Reverse sourcing wholesale is finding a product that is performing well on Amazon, contacting that manufacturer directly, and then developing a relationship to become an authorized seller of their products. You know, where this differs from, say, traditional wholesale sourcing is in a more traditional route, somebody would go to a distributor, find out what the distributor carries, find out what products are good. But the problem is that you just never know what you're really going to get, right? Like you're always just kind of reaching into a blind bag and hoping to pull something out. And it's really inefficient for the current market versus our strategy. And ultimately, one of the things that we found and huge benefits of reverse sourcing wholesale is the fact that whenever you're able to develop that relationship, you're developing it directly with the brand. And that's the person that controls the IP for the products. And, you know, realistically, they're able to give you quite a bit more incentive there's more incentive to work directly with them than, say, with a traditional distributor.
Okay. So I guess what you're saying is two things. The first thing is that the product choices themselves, if you're starting with a catalog of products, that doesn't really relate necessarily to how well they sell on Amazon or whether they sell at all. So that's very inefficient and you're getting around that, which we'll talk about in a second. And I guess the thing is, if you go directly to the brand, the second thing is you're cutting out the middleman, the distributor, then you're getting further back in the supply chain and thus you're going to get a bigger cut of the revenue, right? I'm presuming.
Absolutely.
So that's fantastic. So forgive me, I'm going to break net speed here. So traditional distributor versus this reverse sourcing. I can understand why the traditional way is very inefficient. So how do you make that process more efficient? What's your starting point for this, deciding what to sell in the first place?
No, it really is. It's finding our product on Amazon. We learned early on that, you know, realistically, there's not a better place to look. I mean, at the end of the day, we're trying to sell products on Amazon. So why not start there and find what people are actually looking for and want? So that's the basis for our model. But we have we have a few criteria that we use to help us kind of parse through all those listings. You know, as you know, there's, you know, millions and millions and millions of listings on Amazon. How do you figure out which ones are good? And for us, it really starts with three primary criteria. Our first criteria is that Amazon doesn't sell the product. The reason why, you know, it's not that you can't compete with Amazon like most people believe, you know, would feel like that's the reason. It's less to do with that. But Amazon doesn't play fair. You know, realistically, they don't share the buy box with the same frequency as a normal seller. And that's a huge problem. They do force you to aggressively price down. Like ultimately, sometimes you can beat Amazon, but it's like, I don't want to be in the position to constantly make the minimum amount of money. And then the third reason is a really big reason. And it's, you know, whenever Amazon's on a product, it makes it much harder for you to change or alter a listing. And that's part of what we do is we focus on adding value to the brands that we work with and optimizing their presence. So that, you know, could be something like adding better bullet points, adding a better description, and having Amazon on the listing just makes that incredibly difficult. So that's the first criteria is no Amazon. The second criteria that we utilize in our product selection process is that we look for products with three or more sellers. And the reason that we focus on products with three or more sellers is that, you know, it's counterintuitive, right? It's like, I want to be the exclusive seller of all the products that I carry. So why would I want to start with a product that has three sellers? And the logic is that they're, you know, you're starting from a point of knowing that they're open to working with third-party sellers. And the reason that's big is, or a reason that's important is, you know, it's opportunity costs. There are literally millions upon millions upon millions of brands to contact. If you contacted them all, there just wouldn't be enough time to actually operate your business. I mean, there's literally no way you can do it. So it's we want to start from a position of they're more likely to work with us, so we're not spending so much time dealing with companies that, you know, really aren't aligned in our mission. So the reason we like three or more sellers specifically is you know, particularly on Amazon, kind of a phenomenon, and I know something that you work a lot more with is private label. And, you know, realistically, when you see a lot of single seller products where one seller selling it, it's very high likelihood that it's a private label product or that it's an established exclusive. And you guys know in that private label community, you know, realistically, whenever you designed your product or built your product, you did it with the intention of being the seller in mind, right? Like you were always going to be the retailer of that product on Amazon, at least until you scaled it to the correct point. And so our interests don't necessarily align very well with those products. So we tend to look for products with three or more sellers. The next criteria that we really focus on is that the product sells, you know, numerous times per month. And numerous can be kind of like defined how you want it to, relatively speaking. We prefer products that sell at least 40 or more times a month with a sales history of that. And the reason we do that is the worst thing you can do in wholesale is very, very much a cash flow rewarding business model. Like realistically, you buy a product, you don't have to invest a lot into it to have it sell. And you kind of have that minimum amount of sales that are going to take place on that listing. So whenever you are selling a product, a wholesale product, realistically, it's order your product, you sell through it, and you realize your return. To do that, the worst possible thing that can happen is that you have that your money dies, right? Like you buy a product and it doesn't sell. So that's what we want to do is we want to focus on products that have an established selling history. So our money makes sure that it's consistently turning. Because in wholesale, that's how we make money is by buying a product, selling it, realizing our return on investment right there, and just continuously doing it again. So again, it's really important to make sure that you're buying products that sell.
Wow. That's in a nutshell, some really great, some of it from the private label perspective, as you say, somewhat counterintuitive until you understand why, but it makes total sense. I mean, first of all, if Amazon doesn't sell the product, yeah, you don't probably want to be competing with Amazon ever. As you said, they don't play fair. So that makes total sense. And private labelers kind of run away screaming when you see a market dominated by Amazon for those kinds of reasons. Totally makes sense. You want products with three or more sellers, which is one of the ones where your instincts as a private labeler, you're going to have to park that for a minute. What? I don't have somebody else on the listing, but no, it's not your product anymore. So yeah. And the other thing is you really don't want to be up against private labelers because they probably have like three products they've invested their life savings in. It's like going up against a dog with a bone. You're not going to wrestle it off them. They'll go down in flames before they let you get over there anyway. So, and the product selling numerous times a month, in the end, I think that is where we have common ground with private label model, which is to say you never want to just tie your cash up and then it sits there. The difference, I guess, between between this, and let's talk about this a bit more, comparing the models, which I think is unavoidable for me, having more familiarity with private label, that with private label, you'd normally tie your cash up for quite a long time because you have to put your deposit down, say, in month one when your supplier makes the product. In month two, you pay the balance of it, and then it's on the water for 2 months if it's sea shipping, and then it sells through, hopefully within 3 or 4 months on Amazon. So you're looking at about 6 months to turn your cash over. So tell me how wholesale model compares with private label in terms of the cash required and the cash flow or the cash turn.
For sure. And I think there's something else I can kind of bring into this, and it's why I believe private label sellers are the best wholesale sellers on Amazon. So you think of it from this perspective. Like you mentioned, whenever you go order a private label product, typically you're ordering it from China, you have to pay your deposit, it's manufactured, it ships across the sea. There's like all these things that take place. And, you know, what is it? Probably a month, 6 weeks, 8 weeks that your money is tied up. Would you guess, Michael? Is that fair?
That's really optimistic, to be fair. It's probably, it doesn't work out neatly because obviously all of your money will be tied up for 3 months. If you're getting it, typical lead time is 1 month for manufacture, 2 months for shipping. And then most of your money is going to be tied up for the remaining 3 months while the inventory sells through. So you can't put a neat figure on it, but it's going to be between 3 and 6 months.
Wow.
So quite a long time.
Okay, so with the wholesale model, like a big difference there is the vast majority of our products are ordered domestically, right? So that means that for a product, let's say I call one of our suppliers and I want to place an order. And again, another thing that we do is we don't actually have a warehouse or anything. So we use a prep center, and the vast majority of our products just go directly to Amazon. So let's say that it's a product that ships directly to Amazon. So I call my supplier and I say, hey, I need this many units of this. I go ahead and do whatever their process is for, you know, if I pay for it or if I don't. Like, I get a lot of terms with suppliers as well. And then they ship our order into Amazon, like, immediately. So, that's one of those, our turnaround time from placing an order to having our products received is oftentimes 7 days or less. And then it's, bear in mind, like, let's say that I'm ordering, we tend to order 30 to 45 day supplies, depending on kind of the lead times and things like that. Like, it's as far as a model. And then a lot of times we'll get, say, 30 day terms. So let's say that I order a product, it lands, sells on Amazon. Like, I'm literally not floating any money. It's completely cash flow free in that period until I have to actually pay for the product. In which case, by then I've started realizing sales and been making money from the transaction. So it's quite a bit different in that regard. I think it's a lot more cash efficient than private label. And that's a big deal for private labelers. Like, I think for private labelers, the thing that they struggle with is being able to snowball their cash and be able to get into more products faster. And I think that wholesale gives them that same opportunity. And now let's talk about why I think private labelers I can give you more comparison points, like, as far as, like, you know, what the difference is in terms of, like, competing for the buy box and stuff like that. But it's really not as scary as most people think, I promise.
Well, the first thing, I just want to reflect on that, because I'm literally getting a smile on my face from thinking about, never mind actually my money involved yet, thinking about getting 30-day terms. I order the product, it gets delivered within 7. I've actually probably made most of that money back before I've even played it out. I mean, just in terms of cash flow, that literally puts a smile on my face. I mean, that's a completely different world from the private label business model.
Right. And that's the point. Yeah. Realistically, you can predict how many of a product you can sell within a very close margin. And that's what we do. And that's what our model really is. Because whenever, I started my business, I did it from a cash poor perspective. Like, we had to be focused on turnover. We had to be focused on, making sure that our money didn't get tied up into dead inventory. So we always focus on products that sell and utilizing terms, utilizing other aspects of the business to make sure that our cash flow, our cash is consistently moving. So it really is. I mean, I think it probably is the best cash flow model, because even though, let's say you look at a model like retailer online arbitrage, like, that's less cash intensive than private label. But it's still more in cash, and it's still more cash intensive. Like, no retail store is giving you terms on a transaction, right? Like, this is not happening. And same, so you're always paying for your inventory up front. So that's a big reason that I really do like wholesale. But let's talk about why private labelers are really good at it. And whenever you think about the skills that make you good at private label, right? And you know, you got to look at what wholesale is and the way that most people approach wholesale. You know, if you look at the vast majority of products, and I'm sure that, you know, as a private label sellers, you know, you guys do this a lot. The vast majority of listings are terrible, right? Like the vast majority of listings that you see on Amazon are terrible. And you know, whenever I go look for products, I notice the same thing. The vast majority of listings on Amazon are terrible. What you have to realize is for the brands that we work with, they have established, like they have established followers and fans, right? That are just loyal to the brand. And whenever, you know, you're able to optimize that listing, it has such fast impact. Like, you know, if I go in and I soup up somebody's listing that already has a following, they're going to get immediately higher conversions, which starts moving them up the ranks faster. So like whenever you have these, you know, whenever you understand the components of changing or optimizing a listing and can do it for brands, it's something they've never typically had. Like that's why there are so many bad listings on Amazon. Because, you know, nobody's taken the time to optimize them. Instead, it's been always viewed as a transactional relationship. So that's one of the reasons I feel like private labelers specifically have an advantage in wholesale is they know a lot about optimization and they know why it's important. And then whenever they are able to do that for brands, like they're able to develop that really good connection and bond because they were able to do something nobody else has done. It's a way to strategically add value, and private label people have gotten into that habit of being able to add value on their own listings to kind of like set them apart.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, just in case, if you live in the world of listening to Amazon podcasts, or you've been private labeling or even preparing to do that for several months, I promise that the shockingness of the listings out there from huge brands. I think of Panasonic, for example. I wanted to buy some earbuds. Don't sue me, guys. And one of the listings there, I couldn't buy it because I just wanted something that would plug into the computer, the ones I'm using right now. I can't even remember the brand because they literally didn't show me the plug. They showed me just the earbuds in the main product picture. I couldn't even tell whether it would physically fit my device or not. So even though I was really predisposed to buy it because the brand is so strong, Panasonic, Sony, those things, they all had such awful listings. And I just thought, wow, okay, Panasonic's a big brand. They're not going to listen to me necessarily. Although let's talk about that in a second, about the, you know, the approach to suppliers. But I just thought it would be so dead easy to make this more sellable. I was on the verge of clicking buy and I just couldn't because I couldn't physically see. That's how bad it can be. And the other thing is that people who come into the mastermind who have otherwise been in business, some cases generations, in selling to brick and mortar stores, their minds are blown by the Amazon thing for several months. So do not underestimate how bad people can be at Amazon. It sounds like a crazy thing to say on an Amazon podcast, but if you live and breathe Amazon, if you're a private labeler, yeah, I 100% endorse what you're saying. Just I've seen it myself. So talking of which then, unless you have other really important things to add on that, I think we should crack into the how do we contact the manufacturer, because I guess the next thing I was just saying myself, I suppose I'm voicing my fears, oh my God, why would name this brand be interested in talking to me? So how do we overcome that?
Sure. No, but that's, you know, the reason that I had mentioned that private labelers are great is the reason that they want brands would be interested in working with you, right? Brands have never had that type of attention paid. That's why there's so many awful and you know, god awful listings on Amazon. Is you know, people have always viewed it transactionally. You know, it's all, that mindset of I buy from the distributor, I go sell the product, and when I start running out, I call them and order again, and that's the extent of our relationship. And that's what really has truly set us apart in our model, is we focus on adding value beyond the traditional order process. Like, you know, all the vendors that we work with, we start optimizing their listings. We start to help them with their pictures or whatever it is to be able to add that extra value so they can see increases in sales. And then they start wanting to work with us exclusively. It's not something that happens overnight, but it happens whenever you consistently provide value. And, you know, that's what all these brands want is, you know, they need their own expert. So it's having these skills. I think having the ability to improve Amazon listings and make products sell better is a skill that's currently in high demand. Like being able to show a track record of being able to improve a listing, understanding the core processes, making something sell better on Amazon is a skill that I promise you significantly more manufacturers are looking for than you currently believe. And it only gets, and it's only going to go up. Because think about the world. Think about, you know, the world that we live in, particularly in relation to Amazon. It's like right now you have You have a lot of private label brands that are overtaking the more established brands. And it's like, why is that happening? It's because they're just being driven by better drivers. It's not that the product's necessarily better or anything. It's just that the marketer driving the listing is better. So from that perspective, it's, you know, whenever we want to think about, you know, what is our value to a brand, it's easy to forget, you know, like, what, you know, why would somebody want to work with me? But when you realize that you're a better driver than anybody that they've worked with up until this point, it becomes pretty easy to realize why they might want to work with, you know, say Michael or another private labeler or another seller in general, a knowledgeable seller.
Excellent. Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah. And you're right. I mean, there are a couple of proofs of concept. I mean, one is that the fact that private label products do routinely outsell established brands in an area, if their pricing is right, they may be somewhat cheaper, but not just based on price. Plus the, you know, really effective pictures, infographics, well-written text, optimized for keywords, all the stuff that, as you say, we live and breathe this stuff every day. It seems like meat and drink, you know, normal to us. And as I said, yes, that they're, as you say, that there is always going to be more and more demand as manufacturers get onto the idea that, duh, Amazon is important, but, oh, we don't know about it. That's one of the things that I speak to Will Turnant, who runs a consultancy for brands like that. And he says they could train somebody up in-house, but they have a lot of other things on their plate. So they're quite happy to outsource that, really. And especially, as you say, if you, not just a guy that's transactional, but wanting to add value, I think that's a real key. And obviously, one of the big things I know is key to your sort of business model, your approach. So, okay, how do the nuts and bolts look for that then? So, okay, I get the theory of that. How do I go about, what's a sort of typical path for doing this? I'm sitting in front of my computer. I've analyzed a bunch of listings. I'm gone, okay, your three criteria for reverse sourcing, which were that Amazon doesn't sell the product. You got three or more sellers that's selling quite a few times a month. Maybe I've decided to sell, I don't know, iPhone cases or something. Maybe that's not a great, but maybe I've decided, let's go crazy. Maybe I've decided to sell earbuds by Panasonic because I've seen Panasonic's earbuds have got a terrible listing, but they got a really strong brand and they're still selling despite the terrible listing. So what would I do at that point? What's the practical next step?
Okay. So one of the things that we tend to look for is we do tend to look for smaller brands. Now, Panasonic, like I'm not typically out there sourcing Panasonic, and there's a reason it's, their supply chain is very wide. It's much harder to kind of rein in. But let's say I find a product that fits our kind of our ideal criteria, right? And the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go to that company's website and look for the wholesale option or something like that. So in the instance, let's use the Panasonic example. Let's say I wanted to work with Panasonic. I would go to Panasonic's website. I would look for their either wholesale tab or contact us, and I would reach out immediately to their team and try to set up an account. Just say something like, hey, we're a retailer based in wherever. We've run across your product and would love to carry it. Please let us know what we would need to do to set up an account with you. Something very simple. Like, you know, as far as the physically finding the product, Amazon tells us who makes the product on basically everything that's sold on Amazon. So then it's just, we use Google to go to their website. We reach out via email and establish contact.
It sounds refreshingly simple. So you're using Google and email, so really old school web tools. Is there a particular flow of things after that that sort of maximizes the chance of somebody working with us?
Sure. And realistically, that's kind of what we've really tried to hone in on over the course of time, right? It's like the primary obstacle for most people is whenever they contact a brand, like the brand inherently doesn't want to work with them because they don't really know them. So that's kind of been our secret sauce over the course of time is really been working out that process of getting approved. So we usually our flow from there is email to potential second email and or phone call. The vast majority of a lot of where our closes happen are on the phone whenever we're talking to a brand. And that's just, it's much easier to relate and be able to give information over the phone. So that's, but we do have, we also have secondary email sequences that they can follow up and close as well that typically do pretty good but yeah, that's typically the standard process is contact again with to talk about why they would want to work with you.
It's interesting because there's a lot of similarities with the skill set you need to have for private labeling once you start sourcing a product, as I would call it, as well. And you go and look for manufacturers. And again, you're going to pay them a price per unit. I guess the price per unit is normally a bit lower and you're going to order more units. But in the end, I guess it's not that different. So I'm just thinking in terms of overcoming resistance. Where would you say the cutoff point is for, I mean, this isn't how long's a piece of string, but it's the obvious question, is how small a brand do we need to be looking at to get a decent response rate? And how do we measure that? How do we figure that out?
It's typically for us, really, you could just do it based on listings, right? It's like, does this brand have a lot of listings, number one. What is the typical quality of the listing? Like, you can see stuff like that. That's one good way to kind of gauge the how big a brand is. But there's one important thing to say is, you know, if you're unsure, reach out. Like, the worst thing they can say is no or yes, and then you realize that it's something that doesn't align later. But we try to hone in as much as we can at first, because for that opportunity cost reason, right? Like, I don't want to be contacting just a bunch of people that don't fit. So, but a simple rule of thumb is, if I've heard of them and or expect to see them when I walk into a big box retail store, they're probably just a little bit too big.
So big box is a bit too big. Okay, that makes sense. So in a sense, you're going after brands that look like they're selling well, but they're not particularly household names yet, because they're going to make you jump through hoops for months at a time before you eventually get to make a deal with them, kind of thing.
Kind of. Let's look at it.
Let's look at a
live example.
Yes.
One of the students in our course, and this I think this will give you a cool example about how wholesale is a I understand the value of like building a brand and owning your brand, but whenever you're building these relationships, you're doing the same thing. It's just in a different manner. One of the students in our course, and this guy was a student, it was actually really cool. It's actually a really cool story. Whenever he moved, he moved to the U.S. in 2011, I believe, and didn't speak any English. And he ended up taking our course in 2014. And setting up a business. And it was the first, you know, he had never owned a business before or anything. And he got an account with a company called Espies. They make rock candy. And they're one of the bigger rock candy makers in the world. It's just a very small niche. And you know, it's a small enough niche that when you walk in Walmart, you don't see typically rock candy sitting on the shelf, right? But it is, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's still a well-known brand of rock candy. So what he did is, whenever he started with that particular brand on Amazon, they were doing about $160,000 a year in sales. And then he did the same thing that you guys do. You know, he went in, he optimized their title, he optimized their bullets, he optimized their, you know, just their listing in general. He started running sponsored ads and just taking care of it like it was, you know, his private label product, right? And within about 12 months, they went from 160K in sales annually to 1.1 or 1.2 million. And then what he did is he sold his company, which was just had an agreement with Espies. That's all he sold, was the agreement that they would sell him product and the SOPs that he was using. And he sold that for $400,000 through a brokerage service called Quiet Light. And now he gets paid a percentage of gross profits to help them continue to manage the property going forward. So it's a really cool situation. I mean, you know, yeah. he built his own little brand right there by improving an existing brand.
Funnily that you mentioned all of that, it ticks so many boxes. I mean, yeah, that's amazing that somebody who didn't speak English would probably have struggled for decades to get established in any kind of normal standard profession that gets paid well. And then basically he sold an account and a bunch of standard operating procedures. It's nice you mentioned Quiet Light Brokerage. We had Mark Dowse from Quiet Light Brokerage on the podcast just the other day. In fact, it hasn't been published yet. So you've given a nice plug to those guys. But yeah, it's lovely to think about that possibility of selling. So it sounds like there is, as long as the contract is written in a certain way and the SOPs are solid, that there is actually a sellable aspect to a business with wholesale. Is that a typical example, or is that unusual that people actually sell wholesale-based businesses?
No, I mean, if you look at one of the biggest examples, and this one's, you know, not incredibly recent, but it's a huge example, is Etails. Etails is one of the bigger sellers on Amazon, and I think it was about 2 or 3 years ago they actually sold their business for $75 million, and you know, 95% of their revenue was generated from wholesale accounts.
Do you think this is a future-proof sort of strategy, or do you think that this is now getting, is there a lot of people out there doing the same thing, and those businesses are, that was a sort of phase that's now over, or do you think that's just still keeping going?
No, I think I think for the vast majority of people, whenever you look at, you know, your value, right? It's like how much money can I stand to make if I do this or make a product or what have you? I don't know what an average wholesale product generates somebody in terms of profit per year, but your ability to sign agreements and work with brands has never been a bigger demand for it. That's because people need the, you know, people need it. The next frontier of sales is online. And it's very, very clear. Brands understand this. Like, you don't have to convince a brand that like you need to improve your Amazon presence. They get it. Like, they understand that it's, you know, it is the battleground. It is the place that, you know, 49.1% of sales on the internet take place. And being able to, you know, what are they looking for? They're looking for expertise. Like, they're looking, that's what they're looking for. Is I think the ability to work with brands, develop real relationships, and go from, you know, to, you know, another example of a kind of a story is we were a brand. There's this brand that's been established, you know, a brand that we work with, and it's been established in a space since the 60s. And they were falling behind on Amazon, but their product's amazing. And last year, that brand did $2.5 million on Amazon in sales. And we started working with them. And, you know, whenever we were talking about what we're going to do, all the things that we're going to do and how we're going to be able to help them, like, they decided that, you know, it was our contract with them is for 12% of their retail sales for our consulting with them on that particular brand. You know, what is that? So, you know, that's almost $300,000 in revenue. And, you know, relatively speaking, like that. And it's because they understand how important our knowledge is. And it's crazy because it's already started paying off for them in a really big way just a month into this. And, you know, we've started making huge listing changes. We've started advertising and their sales are spiking like crazy. Yeah. It's just, you know, that's why I believe that it's, you know, competition is, as far as competition, you know, is there competition? There's competition everywhere. Like you want to be, In the private label space, there's lots of great private labelers out there, but there's still space to be able to make money.
There is, yeah. It's just a question of really matching up your capital, your expertise, your ambitions, and the time frame as well. And what's very, very interesting to me, which is why I think in the end, these artificial silos and distinctions between the retail arbitrage, the private labelers, and this wholesale model, which is less talked about in my experience, is that in the end, it's a really artificial distinction. A lot of people I know got started with retail arbitrage, but it is very hands-on and it's hard to scale. I know the odd person does, but I've not personally met people who've done that. And I know a couple of people thinking about it in the masterminds who have been quietly doing, you know, well north of $1 million, probably $1.5 million a year. One of them alongside his day job for several years, which is crazy. I don't recommend that, but, you know, pretty profitably as well. And that's mostly wholesale. And they are now adding private label to the mix. And that's not instead of, that's as well as, because obviously, it's the cash flow of it is horrible, but the defensibility of it, if you get it right, and the profitability can be great as long as you do it well. And as you said yourself, that, you know, that not all private label products are going to fly, even if you're good at it. So this de-risks it as well and increases the cash flow, sort of turning over your cash multiple times a year. So obviously really exciting. The thing that I think is a revelation to me from this chat is the fact that you can sell a business, not just one or two examples, but that it's obviously quite a thing that if you are good at creating a watertight agreement with a brand and you have the standardized ways of doing things that mean you can, you know, package up your expertise, that's actually a sellable company in itself, which is amazing. I mean, that puts a whole new spin on it for me. So I know that you've got to dash off and do some other things because you're running quite a few workshops at the moment. I know you've got a workshop coming up about this. I'm certainly going to be very interested to attend because I think there's a lot in the favor of the model, which is if you want to go to it, folks, I'll put a link up just to make sure you don't miss it at amazingfba.com/TWAF, which is the Wholesale Formula Dance Training Company. So do you want to just very quickly tell us what things people can learn from that if they want to get more information?
Yeah, absolutely. So our workshop, we do this thing once a year. It is the it's 100% free. That I want to start with that. It's 100% free, but we walk through our model, and you know, it's like the criteria that we talked about today on how we select a product. But we go much, much deeper. You know, whatever, you know, what me and Michael were able to talk about here was, you know, what we could cover in 20, 30, 40 minutes or whatever. But this is much more in depth. We give examples of, you know, that product selection process. We also dive deeper into our formula about how we understand how many units of a product we can sell whenever we're sharing a buy box. And then some of those eggs, we were a little more, we dive a little deeper into the contact strategies that we use to convert brands. Basically, if you have any interest in learning how to sell wholesale, this is a can't miss event. Like you really can't. I mean, you're going to, there's so much free information, and we're very open with what we do because we want people to understand our model. Because I really do think it's one of the best models on Amazon. I think that, you know, wholesale and private label collectively are the two best models on Amazon. Like you said, whenever you build a brand, it's, if you do it correctly, it's so defensible. And then, you know, with wholesale, I feel like it's a license to, almost like a license to print money for your Amazon knowledge if you do it right. So it's being able to combine those, I think, is a really powerful thing. But this the way this webinar works is we leave it up for a few days. So if you're able to jump in and you miss a day or so, just you can watch the video and definitely catch up. But it's important to know that it does come down at some point. So it's make sure whenever you get the chance to get in there, start checking it out, because it's just a really cool opportunity for you to learn if this model might be something that you can plug into your business, or maybe if you haven't gotten started, it could be a way for you to get started that's potentially a little more cash flow friendly.
Yeah, and I would just add to that, just because I'm on the sharp end of receiving a lot of people trying to get started in private labeling, and they get in touch with me for mentoring or to buy the course. And sometimes they'll ask, and sometimes I'll make them jump through a little questionnaire. And frankly, if you've got small capital available in this day and age, I don't believe you should be trying a private label. And I always feel really bad turning people away. And the only alternative I've been offering at the moment is, why don't you do some retail or online arbitrage, which I've never personally been that excited about because it's so labor intensive. And as you've discussed with me before, you just can't really, if you go to Tesco's and buy, you know, 50 of some kind of, I don't know, Tresemme shampoo, I don't know why that springs to mind, for $3, and you sell it on Amazon for 20, that's wonderful, but you can't repeat that. And that's a terrible thing. So I really, really, really feel strongly that I want to be able to help those people, many, many people out there who shouldn't probably be private labeling yet because they haven't got the capital to do it properly, and they won't succeed in a competitive market, but who by everything you've said, they tick the box for, could I do the wholesale thing, and learn a bunch of skills that eventually, if they wish to, they can also parlay into their own brand. So I really begging you, if you're one of those guys that's been in touch with me, I'm sorry that I couldn't say yes, do this thing. The private label thing isn't for you if you've got $3,000 or $4,000 in the bank, but if you know, wholesale could be the thing that gets you going. So I would just plead with anyone to check out the model, whether you know interested in Dan's version of it or whoever else. I have to say also that this is not a model, unlike private label and retail arbitrage, that I personally, even though I've been in the Amazon space for 5 years now, have heard about every 5 minutes. It's not discussed a lot, but I personally know several people who are quietly making a lot of money with it. So that's another major hint, right? When everyone's talking about it, it's probably already done. But when you've got a few people talking about it and they're making the money, for me, that says, check this thing out. So bit of a plug there, but I'm genuinely excited about this. I think it's going to be something I'm going to be plunging into as well. And I think, as you said, the skill set from private label makes this pretty much of a no-brainer to explore, at least.
For sure.
So Dan, it's been great to have you on. I know you're dashing around, so I appreciate your time. Thanks so much for coming on and sharing about this exciting business model.
Hey, thanks for having me again, Michael.
My pleasure.
That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now, over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few, then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.